Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is Stone Payton, your host, and with me in the studio is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my esteemed co-host, Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well, but I'm wet.
Yeah, it's a little wet outside today.
And those yellow signs down in the lobby, those are for real. You know, the slippery when wet thing? I got my cowboy boots on. I just about busted it coming up here this morning.
Yeah, it would have been a sight to see. Too bad this is radio.
So it was an interesting ride in. It was it's definitely a flood.
Yep. Hey, good news today. High Velocity Radio filmed live before a live studio audience. We have a studio full of observers today. It's going to be an interesting show.
Well, it's cozy. You know, so usually we'll have two guests, sometimes three. We've got three guests and what do we got? Three or four people observing,
like,
right?
Yep, we have like 20 people.
So we've got a house full and we've got a lot going the balance of the week. And then what's happening next week?
Well, gee, we're hitting the road, aren't we?
We are. We're headed to Orlando.
In Orlando on the Video Dust Jacket Tour, the first official stop. We have 2 days full of interviews from some cool, innovative, hip business authors. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think we've got 12 lined up. We're going to stay there for 2 days, and we'll head back Thursday or Friday night, and we're going to report the whole time, right? We're going to blog, or do we call it vlog?
No one really wants to see you and I on video, but in theory, it's vlogging, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So we got a lot going on, but right now, we'll focus on this. We've got a marvelous show for you this morning. First up, we're going to have a lady by the name of Nancy Bistris with New Run. Then later on, we're going to have a conversation with Richard Chu of Chu Global. And then we're going to bring everything home for you with Elizabeth Wilson. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, I am delighted to introduce Miss Nancy Bistris. She is Director of Marketing Communications for New Run here in Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thanks, Stone.
It is an absolute delight to have you. So tell us a little bit about New Run and what you do over there.
Okay, well, New Run was founded in 1995. It's an international organization. We're focused on the interactive marketing space. And everyone always asks me, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? And I usually tell people, if you think traditional advertising and you think TV, radio, print, that's your traditional advertising. Interactive advertising and interactive marketing is all things not traditional. So 3-4 years ago, I would have just said internet. And nowadays, it's internet, it's mobile, it's social media, it's everything that's not your traditional advertising. New Run is headquartered in Montreal. We have 3 offices in Canada. We have 2 offices in the States, 1 here in Atlanta, 1 in New York. We have offices overseas in Milan, Barcelona, Madrid and Paris, and we also have an office in China. So we have about 800 professionals worldwide. And we do everything from website design and development. We've done some great-looking sites. We also do search engine marketing. We do online media buying and planning. We're doing the back end as well. Our Montreal office is really focused a lot on the back end, and we do a lot of back end projects in terms of the e-commerce platform that we build for clients. We do a lot of that up in, especially in our Toronto office. So everything from soup to nuts, really, on the interactive marketing side.
So what's the attraction? Is it novelty, the fact that it's different than traditional, or has the landscape changed in what people need to see and hear really changed in order for them to be compelled to make purchases, or a little bit of both?
It's really, really changed over the last 4 years. When I first started at New Run again, you know, the focus was really on making really pretty, cool websites. And, you know, everybody wanted something that looked great, and functionality, I think, was secondary. It was really about making it look really, really cool. And I think nowadays when you have disciplines like search engine marketing playing such a huge role in what a company does, say, on Google and how it performs on Google when you do a Google search. I mean, search has become a huge part of what everyone is doing online. So, but then you look at other things like social media, and that has just ballooned over the past year. And what our clients are coming to us and asking us for are a lot of social media strategies. What in the world do I do with social media? And that's just really, really become a huge part of what we're focused on for our clients these days.
But I think even you mentioned search engine optimization. I think that's even evolved dramatically over the last couple of years. What strategy you would employ a couple of years ago, you no longer do.
Absolutely. Search engine optimization, that's become a huge part. And again, our search engine marketing folks are doing everything on the paid side of search to SEO, things that companies can do that are realistic and that are not going to cost them an arm and a leg, like doing press releases and things like that, and keyword searches. Our search team is definitely busy these days.
All right. So NewRun obviously focuses on the larger organizations, but let me put you on the spot here. For the small business, the entrepreneur, what is the one piece of advice you can give them on how to optimize their website?
I would say the keywords, and that's a huge part of it. And also, you know, do simple things. Like I just said, you know, the press releases, writing press releases, doing some good old fashioned PR. I think a lot of people forget about that. And that's become a huge thing, you know, getting quoted in articles, doing byline articles. You know, a lot of companies are tempted to, do things on Facebook. And you know, right now we're not telling all of our clients that that's the most important thing for them to do. We're looking first at their objectives. And I think, you know, going back to your question, Todd, the first question I would have for the person who's, you know, maybe not a Fortune 500 company, maybe smaller, is just asking them, what are your objectives? I mean, what do you want to happen online? And I think from there, that's where you go with your strategy, be it search, be it social media, be it online media buying and planning. It's really nailing down those objectives first. And I mean everything from the business objectives to the marketing objectives.
And those really in the know also try to appear on top-rated radio shows and then have those interviews posted on their website, I would think. Yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brilliant advice.
Yeah.
Brilliant advice.
It is. It's very good advice.
So when you're asking these questions of the clients, you know, what do you want to accomplish? What kind of things do you find are really preying on their mind? What is right just forefront and center
make
for
money.
Them?
They want to make money. I mean, at the end of the day, they really, you know, it's interesting because a lot of clients, that's part of what we're brought in to do. And that's, the, you know, helping them identify those objectives. Yes, we know everybody wants to, you know, ROI, make money, be around in a year and survive the, you know, the economy right now. But it's really, you know, one of the things that we really pride ourselves in doing at NewRun is coming in on the forefront and just saying, okay, we all know about ROI. We know you want to be around. We know you want to make money. But let's get down and drill down to the objectives of what you really want to have happen online and with, you know, maybe a mobile strategy or a social media strategy. And that's really what we focus on the front end.
And whatever they knew, if they knew anything about interactive marketing 2-3 years ago, I mean, that body of work, that knowledge base is completely different, right?
Out the window. Most of it is. I mean, there's still some tried and true, you know, sort of basic fundamentals. But I think, you know, a lot of things have changed, certainly with, again, mobile strategies and, you know, certainly social media and user-generated content and how to utilize that. I mean, certainly there's some basic things you can do as far as your website. And that's one of the things that we look at, too. I mean, we have individuals at NewRun who it's their job to basically look at the usability of a website and really go through it and say, is this functioning well? Is this a good user experience? And, you know, we'll go back to our clients and say, you know, look, you can change this a little bit. You can change this a little bit. And really looking at it from a usability standpoint. So
do all companies need to have an interactive marketing strategy?
I think at this point they really do. I when you talk about interactive, meaning, you know, a website presence, certainly a functioning website presence, you know, something that has good usability, maybe that's not all built in Flash. I mean, that's a lot of we used to see that a lot. And I think New Run actually did that at one point, built a site completely in Flash. And you don't want to do that.
There's a downside to that.
There is. It's not SEO friendly. So a lot of companies that say, oh, I want a pretty website. You know, they built the entire site in Flash, and that's not going to work from an SEO standpoint.
It's not as sexy, I find, the second and third and fourth and fifth time you go back.
Yes.
Like the first time, kind of cool, but when the second or third time you go back, yes, the whole flashy thing's not as sexy, is it?
It's not working as well. So, yeah. You know, I think, you know, again, the biggest thing now is social media, and we have a lot of clients who come to us and say things like, I want a social media strategy. I want to be on Facebook. I want to be on Twitter. And what we're really doing is saying, wait a minute, slow down, back up. What's your strategy? You know, what's your objective? And really focusing on some of those things. And for some companies, it may not be a presence on Facebook. Does it make sense for every company to have a Facebook page? I mean, you know, our VP and managing director here in Atlanta just wrote an article about, you know, just really that notion of going back to basics and, you know, doing what's appropriate for your organization. And I mean, there are Facebook pages, and I'm not kidding, I read this in the Atlanta Journal Constitution, you know, Facebook pages for toilet companies. I mean, come on. I mean, everyone from, you know, the toilet company to God now has a Facebook page. And it's just, does it really make sense? And, you know, do you also have the manpower to really, really man a Facebook page and really, really work a Twitter account? I mean, we see a lot of clients who have opened up a Twitter account and it just sits there.
Yeah.
And it's good to set things up. It's good to start doing things so that you can listen to your customers and certainly react to customers. But as far as just opening up a Twitter account and leaving it alone, not a good move. And if you don't have the manpower and the resources to really work something like that, it may not be the best alternative for you. So, you know, again, I think everybody needs to have some sort of interactive strategy. But again, it's that appropriateness. It really, really goes back to that and what's right for you.
I find a lot of companies that join the space, they open that Facebook and Twitter accounts, they pat themselves in the back, say, we're online, and then they employ the same interruption marketing tactics, the traditional tactics using those tools. Do you find that same thing?
I think our biggest thing right now is that we do find them, you know, basically opening up these accounts or, you know, just saying, well, I saw, you know, maybe their competitor had success in doing it. Maybe they mm-hmm. read an article where another company has had success in doing it. I think there's this sort of notion that, well, they had success with it, I'm going to have the exact same success. And it's just not going to work out. And I think the other thing that we're also really trying to focus on with organizations that are just really wanting to have some kind of social media strategy is also having a social media policy. And we're talking to our clients about having that too. And it really is about sitting down with your employees and really talking about what's appropriate to be doing online with social networks, what's appropriate to say from a brand standpoint. And again, it's not about policing your employees, but it's about saying, listen, you know, we've worked hard to build a brand, and there's certain things that are appropriate to do on Facebook. There's certainly appropriate things to do on Twitter, but you really need to watch it these days, I think.
Yeah, if you're going to walk outside, you need to have your fly zipped.
There you go.
Exactly.
There you go.
So what's next? What's next on the horizon for interactive marketing in general and for New Run specifically?
You know, what we hope to see is the continuation of interactive marketing agencies certainly having a more prominent space at the table of agencies. When you look at big organizations, let's just say, for example, something like a Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is going to have, you know, agencies, traditional agencies, PR agencies, marketing agencies, branding agencies, you know, a handful of interactive agencies. And I think what's important and where the interactive agencies have gone in the past 3 to 4 years is certainly having a bigger voice at that table of agencies. you hear a lot in our industry something called agency of record. And that is pretty much, you know, the enchilada for an agency to be called an organization's agency of record. And you're not seeing it all the time, but interactive agencies are starting to be the agency of record for certain organizations, which is a huge thing because it means that organizations are really taking stock in what interactive agencies are thinking, what they're bringing to the table as far as branding and marketing. It's not just about building websites anymore. And I think that's really what's happening with the interactive agencies is they've evolved from just, you know, the shops that built pretty websites to really going in and strategizing with organizations on their branding, on their marketing, just really everything from soup to nuts. And I hope that we'll see a continuation of that because I think it's smart. I think it makes sense. And I think, you know, a lot of organizations are seeing success with that.
Well, before we wrap up this morning, I know there's a couple other questions I wanted to ask you. And one is around this idea of differentiation because you're not the only game in town.
Nope.
You've obviously, New Run has found a way to create their own little corner of the sandbox and do it really well. Now, one aspect that makes you different, I am very well aware of because you were kind enough to invite Todd and I down to the office. Tell us a little bit about that thing that is just a little different about the New Run culture, at least in Atlanta.
Yeah, it is. We are very proud of it in Atlanta. We are among our network of offices for New Run. We are the only New Run office within the network that has a dog-friendly policy. So we're very, very fortunate. It was something that was founded by one of the previous principals of the Atlanta office. She had two golden retrievers, and we bring them to the office every day. So we are, it is in our lease, we are permitted to bring four dogs to work on any given day, which is really, really nice. I think it certainly does something to the environment. I think it certainly says something to our clients when they visit our office that, you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. I mean, we're serious about our business, we're serious about our work, but you know, at the end of the day, it's all about having fun. And I think having dogs in the environment certainly adds to that element of fun.
And the rumor's true. Stone did trip over a squeaky toy in the New Run break room.
Well, I tell you what attracted me to that so much. For the listeners that don't know, the vice president of sales for High Velocity is a golden retriever named Kara. And so Todd and I are both very much dog lovers. Well, we're just about out of time. But before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, Nancy, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Absolutely. I think in terms of a mistake, I'm not sure it's a mistake or something I definitely would have done differently, and especially with the organization, with New Run, where I work right now, my role with the organization, I definitely would have focused on learning to speak a second language. I think that's really important, especially when you work with an international organization. Most of my counterparts within the communication network for New Run can speak more than one language. And I took about 6 or 7 years of French, and it's one thing to take classes and certainly try to speak it in a classroom, but it's certainly a different experience if you're going to go to someplace like Montreal or Paris and really, really learn it. And if I had to go back and do things differently growing up either in high school or college, I definitely would have studied a different language and been bilingual. I think it's something that is a huge selling point. I would definitely encourage college students to do that, focus on learning a second language, especially if you're going to be in the business environment today.
We've never had that one on High Velocity before.
No, we haven't. I think it's marvelous advice. Yeah. And, you know, maybe you and I ought to follow that because it looks like we're headed across the pond before too long.
Nancy, I blame your father, though, just so you know.
Well, it has been wonderful having you on the show. How can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about New Run and your work?
Absolutely. It's newrun.com. We are www.newrun.com. We're very excited about our new site. There is a social networking aspect to it that we're very proud of, and we think the new site is very reflective of sort of our new positioning at the company too, which is the energy of synergy, and it's really the way we work among our offices and You know, everybody's working as one team instead of office by office. So newrun.com, and we're located in Midtown, and, you know, bring your dog.
Yeah, well, we will. So we'll see you again soon. Can you hang out with us for a little while?
Absolutely.
while we visit with our other guests?
Absolutely.
Terrific. Well, Todd, who else do we have this morning?
Well, our next guest on High Velocity is one of those guys, Stone, who's far smarter than you and I will ever be. He is the CEO of Chew Global. It's one of those companies that helps organizations in the areas of IT, or they deliver multi-million dollar benefits to organizations in IT, operations, and supply chain. Welcome to the show, Richard Chew.
Thanks, Todd, for having me here.
It's great to have you here. So tell us about Chew Global.
Okay, great. Basically, it's a small consulting firm that works with a lot of the growing manufacturers and distributors in different areas of operations and supply chain. As we probably already know, that in operations and supply chain, there's so many different areas, okay? But our focus is specifically in three, dealing with their vendors, their inventory, and their processes. I guess something that, you know, I learned from, I guess, a coach from many years ago is something that when we're talking about results, right, because especially with the economy now, we're always talking about how are you different? Until one day, they said, you know, what type of results are you actually delivering? And we started calculating. We're like, wait a minute. Something that makes us different is what we deliver. So Chew Global makes us different is that we actually deliver a guarantee 3x return on investment in less than 12 months.
Well, that's we want to get more into that because it's the same thing that we in the High Velocity family do.
However, we do. You do.
Shh, don't tell anybody. You just hit on a key point that I want to get into a little more. We've had a lot of guys on this show consulting about how they fix processes, but you mentioned vendors. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you help a company. Maybe they get the wrong vendor.
Okay. Typically, when people think about vendors, they think about someone they just basically you pay money to, right? I don't care if it's a service or a product, right? But they think of, well, how do you actually deal with these vendors, right? But you don't look at it as a vendor. You look more as a partner, right? And a lot of times people go, I don't know how the interaction of communication these days and such. But you go, you know, what are you really looking for? You know, a vendor is there to support you to or a partner, okay? A lot of times what I notice with different companies is that they go, I really want the A, B, and C to happen. But they never ask. So a lot of times when they have these vendor issues with poor service levels or low service levels, first question is, did you ever ask? And they go, no. Have you thought about it? And they're like, I never thought about that. And so one of the things I learned many years ago is I call it the 0-0-X rule, which is if you don't ever ask, you're still at zero. If you get asked and they say no, you're still at zero. You really didn't lose anything. But if you ask and they get you anything, it's still more than where you were to start with. So working with a lot of vendors is basically finding out what our clients are looking for. Also find out what their vendors or partners are looking for, and how can we make that to have a mutually beneficial relationship.
So one of your roles then would be to sit down with an organization and help them identify whether the vendor relationship can be fixed or needs to be terminated, and then advise them on how to go about finding the right fit.
Correct.
Okay.
So what's the favorite part of your job, and what do you find most frustrating?
The favorite part is actually working with a lot of different varieties of companies. So you're not always just going to the same building every day, you know, for X amount of days per year. You always meet different people, different backgrounds. And I think that is probably one of the most interesting. But all along with the different companies and such, you have different challenges that you're actually working with. And I think that personally drives me, is to solve these problems. It's the same principle, but you're taking it in different companies.
So how did you get started in this field? What did you do before this?
Good question. The last company I worked for in corporate was a company called Given Imaging. It is actually a public traded company, and for most people, never heard of the company, but they're basically a company that makes a capsule that you swallow. It takes wireless video through your small intestines. Okay, that's what it does. back then, I was actually the one who was running their U.S. North America distribution of operations and supply chain. At that same time, in short, is Chew Global was already working. Okay, working with a lot of small companies, we would have discussions with family and friends. And basically in 2004, took the company full time. And that's how it started, basically working with different companies in the same area, now working with a lot of the growing companies here in Llano.
Well, Stone and I are big advocates of using video for your marketing. We advise against video of small intestines on the Given Imaging website. Just make a note of that. So
So what's next on your plate? What kind of things are you working on and getting ready to unveil that maybe you can even go ahead and let our listeners know about since they're on the inside track?
That's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things I told Todd over the last few months is I said, we're working on something, but we're not going to announce it yet. Okay.
Ooh, can we announce it here?
I don't know. How many people are listening?
Oh, millions.
Oh, okay.
We're second only to Rush Limbaugh.
Basically, True Global has always been positioned as focused with the growing manufacturers and distributors. But we're actually branching out. We're doing actually some things in the back right now, not just working with the M&Ds, the manufacturing distribution product companies, but we've actually been working with professional services. This has been a test. Audience of the High Velocity, this is the first time you're going to hear it because no one else knows about it yet.
Exclusive scoop.
Press release.
Exactly.
All right. So, your wheelhouse has been manufacturing and distributing. So,
correct.
So help our audience better understand a typical profile of one of your companies.
Okay. Typically, when we're first meeting our clients, they're usually having issues in one of three areas. Basically, number one is the owners run around putting out fires. I mean, it's a small company. Companies we typically deal with are between about 1 and 10 mil. Okay, and they're usually dealing with fires because either A, we talked about vendors earlier, just poor service levels, people delivering late, or they have, because they're M&D type companies, they have a warehouse and they have products. But with the products, they have a lot of fluctuations with them. Too much of one product, not enough of another. What they're physically counting is not what their system is telling them, or the piece of paper some people use. Okay, that's one area. Okay, number two is they're just really disorganized. You go into a warehouse and it looks like a little tornado went through it. They're stepping on stuff. Employees, team members don't really care. And the owners say, you know what? I'm tired of it. I don't have time for this. You know, I want the true accountability and that control through systems to track inventory, yet again, not pieces of paper and Excel sheets, and documented step-by-step processes. And last, what we noticed is that for these companies, some of them are smaller companies, probably in the low mills, just got into what we would call a big box accounts, the Home Depots, the IKEAs, the Walmarts, or even just a big company in their industry. And they're going, you know, what is the best way to fulfill that demand? You know, I can't go hire a bunch of people. I don't have the cash flow to do it. What do I do?
300% ROI, you mentioned earlier, I think. That's got to be very attractive. It surprised me a little bit, particularly given the arena that you're playing in, because Todd's right. We actually do provide a specific ROI guarantee in our work, but we're working in a professional services arena. We're just – at least we've discovered all you got to do is help them a little bit and it can make, you know, just tremendous changes. I was a little surprised to learn that you do that in your arena. How do you pull that off and say more about that?
Thanks, Ev. That's actually something we've been working on for quite some time. Most people think of operations and supply chain. It's all about numbers. You're sitting back with a calculator doing, you know, deviations, averages, et cetera, from their very technical details. But I think the first thing, I think when Nancy mentioned earlier, was that, you know, before you even jump into anything, you got to figure out where the company is and what is really happening. Okay, and with that, during our conversations initially with the prospects, not even the client at this time, we had to find out exactly what is happening, whether it be at, you know, what's changed or happened, you know, what is it really costing them, how is that truly impacting them. These are the times that we set in the very beginning to find out what is really impacting them, and from there we can find out a lot of the costs. A lot of times, most of the times, these companies, they don't even know their true cost and how it's really impacting them.
Well, that's where I was headed, because don't you find sometimes that they're not doing a very good job of tracking any of this stuff? They can't measure ROI because they don't know what their ROI is now.
Oh, you're right. You're exactly right. I was actually at a company talking probably a few months ago, and it was two partners. And they basically said, oh, we need your help. Well, that's great. But then we started asking questions, you know, what's going on? What is it costing you? You know, 1, 2, 3. Then 30 minutes later, we're saying, okay, so summary is it's costing you 1, 2, 3. Now the other partner says, oh, no, it's not. Now it's 4, 5, 6. We're like, whoa, wait a minute. And they would say, well, we really don't know. And I said, just with any type of interaction, we said, you want to make a change. You don't know what it's costing you. Why would you do anything? And they looked at you and I said, well, you really got to sit back as the owners. You're the owners of a company. This is your company. It's going to impact you, your family, et cetera, from there. You got to figure these things out in the very beginning.
It's amazing to me how many businesses don't know the answers to those questions.
They don't.
Whether they're large organizations or home-based businesses, they don't know those numbers. And And it's, you know, we talked about ROI earlier on social media, and that's very difficult to measure. But I always tell people, well, you got to be measuring, quantifying everything anyway. And then your sales numbers, where leads are coming from, all that stuff. And then you layer on a social media campaign. Then you can kind of see how those numbers are affected by that. And that's one way to do it. But it's amazing how many people don't know the answers to those questions.
You're right.
And I suspect that's a big part of your initial discovery process.
It is.
Is helping them figure those, what 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5, 6 is.
Correct.
Richard, a great many of our listeners are entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs. What advice do you have for them as they're thinking about maybe leaving their company and starting something new, or if they've already struck out, what advice would you share with them that you think might save them a little bit of heartache?
I think as an entrepreneur, a lot of times we're sitting in corporate and going, you know, I could do this myself. Okay, I could go out and do whatever myself. But you had to really think about what type of commitment you're about to make. Can you really deliver on that commitment? Okay, it's not always the easiest thing. And there are things you can do before you get out into running your own company. Okay, it's planning ahead of time. Okay, that's going to go to a question later. But when you're thinking about being an entrepreneur, think about the total effect it has on you, or it's about to have. It's not always the fun and games. There's always the good, and there's always the bad. Yeah, so you have to think about both sides.
Well, I think you're going to enjoy our next conversation, because we're going to be speaking to a lady who specifically coaches to entrepreneurs. Before we have an opportunity to visit with her, though, you heard us do this a little while ago with Nancy and put her on the hot seat. I wonder if you would do the same for us and share a specific experience, a mistake that you've made at some point in your career, and what you feel like you learned from it.
Okay. It's funny you mentioned that, Sanders, because your previous question of what would you tell people who are about to become entrepreneurs, this is where it comes in. I think the biggest thing that the mistake that I wish I did not make in the past before I left was to develop that network early. A lot of times, you know, when you work in corporate, you go to work, you do your thing, and you come back. Okay? And some people who are in the corporate world, they start actually developing those networks of people. Remember, your clients, your prospects, your partners, your vendors, it doesn't matter what you call them. Okay. It starts every day. It doesn't matter where you are, where you meet them, you develop that early. Okay, I think my mistake in the past was that in corporate, I didn't think about that. But then once I left, I was like, wait a minute, I should have had all those. And I think that if I had to go back and do it again, when I was working corporate, I would have developed those networks early on.
It can get chilly out there in a hurry, can't it?
So
it's important to have that foundation. Listen, how can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about Chew Global?
Okay. You can find more about us at Chew Global at www.chewglobal.com, just how it sounds. All of our information is on there. If you want to find out more details of our past clients and case studies and ROIs and such, you know, go on the website. All of our information is there.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, and I hope you'll come back sometime. In fact, I'm really thinking for the Manufacturing and Distribution Roundtable show that we're doing
later.
Ooh,
that's a good idea.
I think, you know, we get Young Blood, and we get this guy, and maybe the folks from PSI Digital. That would be
brilliant.
We'd like to have you back for a roundtable if you had a good time.
Yeah, that would be great.
You've exhausted your one good idea for the week.
Well, hang in there with us while we visit with our next guest. Do you mind?
No problem.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is Miss Elizabeth Wilson with Elizabeth Wilson & Associates. They're a full-service business consulting firm specializing in training, community, and economic development, project management, and a ton of other things. There's a lot to learn from this lady, and I just I have a lot of questions, and I know Todd does too. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Hi, Stone. Hi, Todd.
How are you? Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you, and I got to tell you, the reason that you sort of got on our radar screen was because of this book that you've written.
Yes.
Entitled When Life Gives You Lemons, Open a Lemonade Stand. Tell us a little bit about this book and a little bit about your consulting practice.
Sure. When Life Gives You Lemons, Open a Lemonade Stand came from the saying that everyone always says, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Well, that's great, but lemonade is just a cool, refreshing drink. You know, after you drink the lemonade, then what do? But the lemonade stand is something that is productive, something that can go on and on and on. And I really think that in this particular economy, since everybody's being squeezed anyway, you might as well be productive in the process.
Well, you know, I've seen in your writing, and I know I've picked up from a brief conversation with you, that you're actually pleased. raised with the current economy. That sort of took me aback a little bit. Say more about that.
Yeah, I think I'm the only person that's kind of happy that the country is going through the upheaval that it is. I think it's about time. I wrote this book about a year ago, and I was kind of out there telling everybody, think about starting a business. You should consider a business, when everybody was fully employed and happily in their companies and kind of comfortable and not looking to new ventures. Well, now, when the entire country is feeling the pressure of trying to make ends meet and feeling uncomfortable in their employment situations, I think this is a solution that we should have looked at probably about maybe 30, 40 years ago. Maybe we wouldn't even be in this situation if we had put entrepreneurship in an equal view of employment all this time.
And so you really do view entrepreneurship as a solution to economic challenge.
I do. I see it as not only a solution, but as something that should be taught early from kindergarten through grade school, through high school, through college, and on through life. I think because the economy in America kind of changed during the Industrial Revolution, we used to be much more entrepreneurial as a country as a whole. And once the Industrial Revolution came along and everybody started thinking good jobs and let me work for the company that I can stay and have the gold watch, it just changed the focus of our country. And because of that, other non-industrialized countries actually kind of took it upon themselves to become more entrepreneurial than we were. So actually in this country, only about 15% of the people in the United States own their own business. That is a very small percentage if you think about it. That means 85% of the people have been employees. So if we can at least change that 15% to 20-25% over the next few years or so, I think it will really put this country in more of an equal standing with the global community, where actually about 80% of the people in non-industrialized countries are entrepreneurial and have their own businesses.
And this isn't just you thinking it's a good idea. You're out there helping folks. You're doing. You've got some specific programs in place. Say a little bit more about the things you're actually doing day to day to make this happen.
Well, since 1996, I've been an entrepreneurship teacher and coach. I've been setting up entrepreneurial training programs all around the country. Starting here in Atlanta in 1996, I started an entrepreneurial training program for women called Business Now. And over the last 13 years, that's been my goal. I've been the Janetta Appleseed of entrepreneurship, going from
I like
city
that.
To city.
Janetta Appleseed.
I've been working with companies and organizations, setting up entrepreneurial training programs all over the country. And these are usually small programs that teach people how to start businesses. Well, it's always been a struggle because people have always kind of encouraged people get that good job. I blame women. They've always said, I want the man with the good job as opposed to the entrepreneurial guy selling T-shirts. Well, it's changed us. It's made us a little bit too dependent and less able to just put our shingle out. It's made it so that people don't even want to encourage people to be entrepreneurial. And I found that some people really have no choice. They're not going to ever be in line for the good job. They're not going to ever be really employable, or life has given them such circumstances that entrepreneurship should be their first choice.
She nailed me, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Yes,
terminally unemployable.
Yeah, yeah. How does a person decide if they are entrepreneurial? Is there a process or a test? Is there steps they can take to find out if they're cut out for that?
Yeah, I think one of the first steps they should do is check their pulse, and if they have one, they should consider entrepreneurship. That's my initial entry into entrepreneurship. I think we've given entrepreneurship this myth of, oh, it's so difficult. Oh, there are certain people who are born entrepreneurs. Oh, you have to see a light in the sky that shines and tells you to start a business. No, lemonade stands. That's why I focus on the lemonade stand. When a person that is 10-year-old, 8-year-old has a desire for something that their mother or father won't give them the money for, they open a lemonade stand. And I think it's just that simple. If we take that same concept and continue to build on it through our lives, we'll always have something on the side that we can immediately go to when some door closes or when we are not bringing in enough resources to take care of our own needs.
So is it fair to say, if I'm understanding you correctly, and I think I agree with you, that it's our overall culture is not really cultivating entrepreneurs. The parents at home should be encouraging more lemonade stands. The school system is antiquated, I don't think. It's not teaching entrepreneurial principles and philosophy. And I think our government is not facilitating.
The government, the school systems, the homes, the churches, the community center, nobody is putting entrepreneurship in an equal setting as job creation or as learning employment skills or learning a trade. With everything should go, you can do this for someone else or you can do it for yourself. If we start this culture change early on, then it won't be so uncomfortable or unusual to consider entrepreneurship at any given time. If that employment door closes on Tuesday, by Wednesday, you should be opening a business. That's how I see it. It should always be an option. And we have to start thinking in our minds first and just take away the stigma of self-employment. Oh, I'm starting a business. Oh, that's so scary. No, it's not that scary, and it's not that difficult. And with the tools that are available now, with the internet, with the trainings that are available online, it's so much easier now than it's ever been before.
Do you think the internet and the new media is going to ultimately change that culture?
I think it is the key that's going to change the culture, because this generation that's coming up after, well, I'll say after Stone and Todd, not me, but the next generation coming up is more internet savvy, and they have access without approval. All the trainings, I think Google is working on this now to make every book will be available online. You can access Harvard information through the internet. All these tools are available now and accessible, where before you had to have approval to take advantage of these things. So I think once we start talking the talk, people will start walking the walk, and then next thing we'll see the clicking of information to help people to actually start these small businesses that can then grow on to larger, medium size, and hopefully one day even big businesses.
I really like that phrase, access without approval. I think that has application in a lot of arenas today.
Oh, that's so high velocity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, talk about, did I read this weekend that the Philadelphia library system is shutting down? I mean, they're closing their public libraries because they can't afford them. I mean, it's because that's something to talk about. The new world is upon us. Yeah. You know, and I think Richard had a good point on when he was sharing his mistake about that, building your network.
Right.
If you're stuck in that cubicle and you think you ultimately want to be an entrepreneur and be your own thing, boy, you got to start building that network right now.
Right now. Don't wait. As I said, at any given time, people are always, I think people who are employee-minded, who've always been employees, one thing they keep up to date is their resume. You know, just in case, you keep on adding those things, you keep kind of brushing it up. I think people should also do that to a business plan. Even when you're employed, you should have the thought of a business plan in mind that you're working and you're developing. And again, at any given time, if they say today's your last day here at this company, then by the end of the week, you're already putting your branches out. You're already putting your shingle out because you're comfortable with it. You already have it in play. That's one of the things that I encourage people to do, to at least think about it. What would you do? Start preparing. Start identifying the training programs. Start identifying your networks. Start identifying how much money you'll need. So when time does come, it's not such a culture shock to step into business.
Can Todd and I borrow some money? No, wait a minute. That's not the question. The question I wanted to ask was, where can people access funds for business?
That's one good thing, too, about technology. Technology has made funding sources more available than ever before. We know all the problems that are happening with the commercial banks and traditional banking. Well, those doors have never really been open to small businesses anyway, what we call micro businesses, those businesses that banks don't even really want to be bothered with. So just as we found from the international community, peer lending, microfinance, micro funds under $100,000, under $35,000 are available even in online sources. I've listed a couple of them. The Grameen America, Grameen International is one of the micro lending programs that's been active in the international community for over 20 years, and now they have an American branch. Another is Accion, Accion USA. Again, they were imported from the international community, but they're looking for people, looking for small business who would like to apply for funds. And usually small businesses don't need as much money because they're not actually going to buy brick and mortar buildings. They don't really need large pieces of equipment such as trucks, things of that nature. You just need what you need to get started and to actually start having some working capital. So those are just two of the sources, and there are a couple of other sources that are available. Also, there are small business training programs and micro-lending programs all around the country. A lot of them have loan pools specific for small business development, and most of those loan funds are underutilized.
Working capital. That's what we're missing.
That's what we need. Cash.
Cash.
Don't run out of cash.
Wow.
But no, was it last week or week before that we had Warren Neuberger on, CEO of 40billion.com, and they've really facilitated this idea of going to your to the network that you're building, Richard, and asking them for money, but letting you do it in a little more structured way. Then,
but utilizing social media.
Right, but using it, but it's more structured, and so you don't say, hey, Mom, hey, Uncle Bill,
right.
Can I borrow some money? So
right.
Those resources are out there, and they're probably going to continue to build more of them, right?
Continue. It is the new, it's one of the new social media tools because it's a win-win for everybody. It brings people together, those who want to lend money and those who need to borrow money, and it structures it so it is not going to Uncle John to ask for money and just walking away. It actually is facilitated. It's supported. There are collections processes in place. So it's a whole new area, and it is brand new.
So tell us about Global Entrepreneurship Week and what your involvement in that is.
Well, I'm excited. There's a large foundation. The Kauffman Foundation came up with a great initiative about 2 years ago called Global Entrepreneurship Week. Well, that's a whole week in November that's specifically focused on entrepreneurship all around the world. And there are probably 1,000 different organizations that are going to be participating, and it's all focused on entrepreneurship, focused also with helping younger people to consider entrepreneurship and start small businesses. So I'm excited to be a part of that. I just threw myself in. I wanted to make sure that I was having at least one or two entrepreneurial training activities, webinars, some in-face trainings during that week, because I think it's going to be the way of the future for everyone to have at least had one entrepreneurship training class or some sort of activity just for them to have the opportunity to consider entrepreneurship.
Well, give us a little more insight. Tell us a little bit more about your book and how we can get our hands on this thing.
Sure. When Life Gives You Lemons, Open a Lemonade Stand. Again, I guess I was a prophet. I wrote this book about a year ago before everything started. Actually, it took me a couple of years to write it, but I wrote it out of frustration from seeing so many people who couldn't find jobs and who really didn't see employment opportunities for them. So I wrote this book to help people who would never really consider themselves good employees or struggling with employment. I actually have chapters to help ex-offenders to think about entrepreneurship, also domestic violence survivors, women who might have to leave their homes and end up somewhere else, but they still need to come up with economic ways to take care of themselves, people with really bad credit who will not be able to get a traditional business loan. I have some chapters for them on how to start a business. People with disabilities who just have difficulty finding employees who will work around their physical needs. All of those groups, I've kind of specifically written chapters to help them to think about starting a business. And I think now I probably need to rewrite the book and include a chapter in there for people who are newly unemployed.
Big market.
But it really is a very practical how-to book full of resources that you can tap immediately. And how can we get our hands on this book?
You can get your hands on the book by going to Amazon.com or any of the traditional book sources. Also to my website, www.elizabethwwilson.com.
Before we let you go, Elizabeth, you saw us do this twice already this morning. We would love to ask you to share something with us as well. We like on the High Velocity Radio Show to ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Would you do that for us?
Sure. I think one of my mistakes, and I'm as guilty as the next person, that I allowed myself to become employment focused. I did a lot of teaching, helping others start businesses, and I kind of put my own business to the side for a minute. So I'm preaching to myself as well as to others to say never, ever put aside your dreams, your ideals. Always keep that business plan up to date, be ready to go at the whenever you need to start that business, and stay focused on your future and your dreams.
Excellent advice. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It was an absolute delight. That was a packed show, Todd.
It was a full show, but what a great one.
Yeah, another fun day at the office, huh?
Another fun day, yes, sir. Although we're bringing dogs next week.
Yes, we are. We're going to be dog-friendly starting next
week. Dog-friendly radio show.
I like it. That's a new slogan for us.
I'm sure Lee loves that idea.
Yeah. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, our producer Lee Cantor, Elizabeth Wilson, Richard Chu, Nancy Bistritz, and a studio full of observers saying we'll see you in the fast lane.